had to tune in to the end of that Mets game. Mets sweep the Yankees. That's the real headline news here of tonight. All my Yankee friends told me that the Mets were going to get swept by the Pinstripes. What happened? What happened? This is your AEW Dynamite Fight for the Fallen review, fresh off a Mets walk-off win, back-to-back wins over the Yankees. I am the Solemn Monster. It is Wednesday, July 27, 2022, for an episode of Dynamite that was much better than last week. I enjoyed the show a lot better and much more focused, built around the return of the American Dragon. Bryan Danielson is back. We have not seen him in action since the Anarchy in the Arena match back at Double or Nothing at the end of May. He suffered the concussion. He missed Forbidden Door. Back in the ring tonight. But it was Daniel Garcia getting a win over Bryan Danielson in the main event tonight. Main event Garcia. We've talked about how many main events this kid has had, but has never won one before. I can't think of a big match that Daniel Garcia has won yet in AEW. Tonight was the biggest win in this company for this kid. It wasn't clean, but a win is a win. And it's very good and very important for Tony Khan, I think, to have Bryan Danielson back right now at a time when they are still hurting from injury. CM Punk is still out. Kenny Omega is still out. Adam Cole is still out, among others. But those are kind of the three big names that are still left on the shelf. So to get Bryan Danielson back now is a very important piece of the puzzle. But we also have a new FTW champion. Speaking of the color orange, tonight Ricky Starks defended his championship against Danhausen. Danhausen is not the new FTW champion. But we talked about this last week. I brought it up. I pitched it right here on the stream. I said, there's only one outcome here that makes sense. There's only one title change here that makes sense. There's only one person, one name who makes perfect sense to carry the mantle of the FTW title. I didn't think they were going to jump into it this quickly, but in fact, Hook has his first taste of gold here in AEW, and Hook is the new FTW champion. We had Jungle Boy on the mic tonight with what I thought was the best promo of his life. This is for someone who, let's be honest, promos are not really his specialty, and I thought tonight was a breakout moment for him on the mic. And if you are a Canadian fan of AEW, if you are up north, you enjoy the AEW product, you can rejoice. You will not have to wait much longer to be able to enjoy it live because AEW is coming to Canada. I have the dates. I have the details a little bit later on. I only wish that it was for All Out. That is the only thing that I regret about this news. I think it's very cool that they're finally making their way up north. I think the Canadian fans are some of the most passionate, loudest fans. When you think of what are the best cities, I think Toronto is certainly going to be on a lot of people's list. It would be on my list. There have been a lot of hot wrestling crowds in Toronto. We just got the announcement today that WrestleMania is coming back to Philadelphia. Philadelphia is another big wrestling city. Of course, New York, Chicago. But to have All Out in Toronto would have been huge. And as it turns out, you'll only have to wait a little bit longer to get there. So we got a lot to get into here tonight. Boy, do we have a lot to get into. Hit that like button. That's the first thing I need you guys to do. The most important thing that you can do for me is to hit that thumbs up right now here on this video. Super chats are open. You will see them popping up. That's the other important thing you could do. If you have questions or comments about tonight's show or anything else, drop a super chat. We'll hang out a little bit later. I will read all of the super chats that come in, and we will hang out as we always do here on these streams. I want to thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage tonight. There it is on your screen. Hit that sub button, hit that like, and we are going to kick things off here. The show opened with good old JR, Jim Ross. We had Tony Schiavone, we had Taz, and we had Excalibur, all on commentary together. So I guess the experiment of having Jim Ross come out to kick off the second hour has come to an end. They had the full booth here when the show went on the air. For the AEW World Championship, interim AEW World Championship on the line, Jon Moxley defending against Roosh, coming off a win over Dragon Lee at Death Before Dishonor this past Saturday night. Roosh got the jump on Moxley before he even got into the ring and before his music was even done playing. And he took him outside the ring and drove him into a chair. We are now 5 minutes into this television show tonight. Right? We had the entrances, the bell rings, the match begins. So we're 5 minutes into the show. We are barely 90 seconds into this opening match. And already, Jon Moxley is busted open. Jon Moxley is bleeding. Jon Moxley, I don't know. We can have a competition here with Jon Moxley and Cody as far as who bleeds the most. Who has the desire to bleed more? Is it Jon Moxley? Is it Cody? Is it Bryan Danielson? He bled tonight, too, in that main event. In fact, that's one of the reasons why he ended up coming to AEW in the first place and didn't stay in WWE. Because he had a whole conversation with Vince McMahon, and one of the things he told Vince McMahon that he wanted to do, why are you leaving? I want to bleed. So you put them all in the ring together, and you'll end up with a fucking bloodbath. So he was bleeding from the forehead, and Roosh wiped the blood on his hand and licked it. I always hate that spot. Used to do that all the time in Ring of Honor when I used to go to some of the old Ring of Honor shows. I mean, Jimmy Jacobs is probably the sickest example of that when, what was it, Jay Briscoe, right? That angle they did all those years ago with the Age of the Fall, right? Was that the faction? And Jay Briscoe was hung upside down and he was bleeding and he just stood underneath him and he was letting the blood drip all over him. He opened his mouth. He let it drip into his mouth. Wrestlers are some sick fucks, I have to say. I love wrestling. I have all the respect in the world for these guys, but they're sick fucking people. So Moxley came back with a tope suicida, took the advantage. Snap suplex Rush on the floor, or Roosh. Roosh came back and wrapped a camera cord around Moxley's neck and was choking him heading into the first picture-in-picture break of the show. For some reason, this was not a disqualification. I know they don't like doing DQs in AEW. It's one of the things I appreciate about the product as compared to other promotions is that they don't immediately jump to the disqualification all the time, but sometimes it's a little hard to justify. So back from the break, Moxley hit a superplex. He was not able to make a cover. They both got to their feet. They were trading German suplexes. Moxley landed a King Kong lariat. Roosh, though, fired back with a snap German suplex, and he applied a crossface. Moxley, though, escaped, and he landed repeated stomps on the face. Roosh recovered. He suplexed Moxley into the turnbuckles, and he placed him on the top rope. Moxley, though, bit him on the face, and he shoved him backwards into the ring. Moxley was on the top rope, and Jose was out there, Jose the assistant. And Jose distracts the referee. That allows Andrade, who came down to ringside, to climb up on the apron. He shoves Moxley off. Andrade only a few days away. Only a few days away from teaming up with his father-in-law in his father-in-law's final match against Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal this Sunday. We'll talk about that later, though. So he shoves Moxley off. He crotches himself on the top rope. Here come the Lucha Brothers. Here comes Penta. Here comes Rey Fénix. Here comes Alex. All coming on down to the ring to chase off Andrade. Andrade, of course, has, over the past several weeks, taken both of their masks. So they chased him off into the crowd. Roosh hit a straitjacket pile driver for a very close near fall. He set up for a shotgun drop kick in the corner. Moxley, though, avoided it, and he grabbed the choke. Roosh used a headbutt to escape. Moxley pulled him into the Death Rider, and Roosh kicked out. But Moxley quickly transitioned into the Bulldog Choke, and he got the ref stoppage to retain his interim world championship. This is the match that Roosh needed to establish himself in AEW. Right? He's already been established. We know what his credentials are. He's established himself in Ring of Honor. He's a former Ring of Honor world champion. Had an excellent match with Dragon Lee at Death Before Dishonor this past weekend, but up until tonight, he had yet to have this type of a match in AEW. In fact, he hasn't made very many appearances in AEW. So this was like, for AEW, this was his coming out party tonight. This was Roosh on display, showing you what he can do. By the end of this, they were getting chants from the crowd. People were into this. They had an excellent match. I thought that, it was a hard-hitting match, very physical match between these two. And that's probably what I enjoyed most about it. Now, after the match was over, we hear Chris Jericho's music. And out he comes with some of the members of the Jericho Appreciation Society. I think some of them were missing. They walk out onto the stage. Jericho had a black eye. And he had some Band-Aids on his nose. He broke his nose in the barbed wire match with Eddie Kingston last week. It was on the spot where he grabbed Kingston out of nowhere for a code breaker. Kingston happened to have, I think it was a baseball bat, wrapped in barbed wire in his hand. So when he grabbed Kingston and hit the code breaker, the barbed wire bat fell straight down onto Jericho's face. And he broke his nose. Angelo Parker, though, had the microphone. And he told the fans, AEW Galaxy, appreciate us. Little riff on Roman Reigns there. Laying it on a little thick, I think, as far as the WWE stuff. Jericho took the microphone, said that Garcia and Sammy Guevara would take care of business tonight since they both had matches of their own. And he mentioned that the newest member of the Jericho Appreciation Society is Anna Jay, who turned heel last week. She is now officially, she's no longer part of the Dark Order. Dark Order, by the way, didn't seem all too bothered by this. Now, I didn't see any vlogs that some of them may have filmed. It's possible that there was some vlog material on YouTube that addresses it. We had a very brief Dark Order appearance later in the show in a backstage segment. And nobody seemed too bothered by the fact that Anna Jay is now part of the Jericho Appreciation Society. So he gave the microphone to Anna, and she cut her first heel promo. She threatened to prove how tough she is by choking out everybody in the building. And she was pointing and saying, I'll choke you out, I'll choke you out, I'll choke you out. You know, like half the male fans in the crowd were like, yes, please. So she's telling everybody that she's going to choke them out. And she's going crazy, and they have to calm her down. And, you know, it came off more like she was playing heel than making me believe that she actually was one. Jericho took the mic back, said that he proved how tough he was last week when he beat up Eddie Kingston, and he would beat up Jon Moxley next. He challenged him for his interim AEW World title in 2 weeks at Quake at the Lake in Minneapolis. Who comes up with these names? Who comes up with these names? Quake at the Lake. Moxley said that he used to look up to Jericho, but everything he's doing now is crap. He doesn't want the sports entertainment crap. He says he wants Jericho to leave everybody at home. No more wizard. He said he called Jericho the last survivor of the Heart Dungeon. And he said that in 2 weeks, the Chris Jericho that he wants is Lionheart Chris Jericho. Old school Chris Jericho. And Taz was on commentary, and Taz talked about, oh, I know that Chris Jericho. I wrestled that Chris Jericho in the old ECW. So, and again, I like Taz on commentary. Taz, that's one of those things where, again, he can relay stuff like that. But Taz is very good, and I'm glad that he is now seemingly a permanent part of the Dynamite announce team. But I called it a few weeks ago. Did I not? Did I not talk about this very thing even before last week, weeks ago? We were kind of looking at, okay, who's next to challenge Moxley for his interim world title? We didn't know when CM Punk might be back. We still don't know when CM Punk is going to be back. The update on CM Punk, there's no firm update, but based on some of the reports coming out of Comic-Con, where he was this past week, it's not all that encouraging. It's possible he can make it back in time for All Out, but you know, he was in a walking boot. People who were there said that it looked like he was in pain. He talked about how his foot was shattered. And he's had to relearn. He's in the process right now of relearning how to walk. I mean, that doesn't sound to me like somebody who's ready to make an imminent return in the next, you know, 5 or 6 weeks. But it is possible, I suppose, that he could be back. And in fact, the fact that they're doing this match with Moxley and Jericho in 2 weeks tells me that they must think that there's a pretty good chance they will get Punk back for All Out. Because otherwise, I don't know why you would blow this in 2 weeks instead of just waiting for Chicago and making that your all-out main event. So either they have a pretty good sense that Punk is going to be back, or, you know, it's 50-50, but they think there's a good shot that he'll make it back in time for Chicago. So they're doing this in 2 weeks. But I said, when Jericho was, you know, announced for the match with Eddie Kingston, And people were, you know, we were talking about who should win that match and what do I think is going to happen. You know, I said that Jericho, I think, is going to win. I think Jericho should win. I would book Jericho to win. Jericho should be next in line to challenge for the interim title because Moxley is going to need at least one more person to wrestle before Punk does come back. Jericho is somebody who himself has been a former AEW world champion. Now you have the first AEW champion and the second AEW champion colliding for the interim title. Jericho is somebody that he could beat without putting him in the ring with another new guy. You know, he wrestled Brody King a few weeks ago and they had an excellent match. And of course, he beat Brody King just like tonight. He beat Roosh, right? The outcome was never in doubt. You know what? Jericho is somebody who could go in there and lose. Because you know Moxley is not losing until he gets Punk. So it's a big name for him to go in there and beat. Pitch the whole thing. It all made sense to me. And that's exactly what they're doing. We're going to get that match in 2 weeks. So then they cut back to the announcers. And on the desk in front of them, we saw three championship belts that we had never seen before. And I think Excalibur joked, he said, oh, these are not ours. It's like one belt for each of them. I think Tony Schiavone was gone. He went to go interview somebody. So you had Excalibur, you had Taz, and you had Jim Ross. And Excalibur joked, yeah, these are not ours. But I'll put them up on screen for those of you watching live so you could see them. There they are. They're finally here. We knew they were made. Tony Khan said that they've been made. They've been sitting in his office, I guess. They've been sitting in his house or wherever for many, many weeks, if not months. The AEW Trios titles. And the Trios championships are going to be decided in a tournament with the finals to take place at All Out in September. So that is how they are going to determine the first ever actually, if you look at that photo, it does look like they're the first Trios champs, right? You got good old JR. You've got Excalibur in his stupid mask. And you've got Taz. So they look like they're ready to defend those titles. But this is something that has been in the works for quite some time. And there are any number of possibilities here. I am generally not a fan of AEW continuing to introduce new titles because I think they have enough already. But the Trios titles are titles that I have been waiting for them to introduce because they do have so many, you know, three-way matches meaning, you know, six-man tags. And they have so many factions and they have so many trios in this company that it makes sense for them to have a set of Trios titles. And so now, you know, they're going to get Kenny Omega back soon. You could do Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, or if Kenny is not ready to come back, based on the segment later in the show backstage, maybe it's Hangman Page and the Young Bucks, but some formation of the Elite. These belts are tailor-made for them, right? So you've got them. You've got how many combinations? I jotted them down. I probably don't even have all of them down, but you've got the Elite. You've got the Jericho Appreciation Society. You've got Adam Cole and Red Dragon, right? Kyle's out hurt. Cole is out hurt, but when they're ready to come back, obviously, you put them together. They're a trio. I mentioned the Jericho group, the Blackpool Combat Club. You've got Death Triangle. You've got House of Black, right? You've got the Gun Club. You've got Best Friends. I mean, hell, you had Andrade out there with Roosh. All you got to do is get Dragon Lee in there or Bandito or somebody, and you could put them together as a trio. And that may not even be all of them, but those are kind of the key ones. So you have so many different teams that you can put together here. And again, I think if Omega is back in time for All Out, those belts belong to him and the Bucks. If it were me, I would make the House of Black the first ever AEW Trios Tag Team Champions. That would be my choice. But if Omega is going to come back in Chicago, and I know he's been hoping to and he's been working towards that goal, I just find it hard to believe that it wouldn't be him and the Bucks ending up with those belts. The Bucks already dropped the tag team titles. Maybe that's paving the way for them to win the Trios belts, but if it's me, I go with the House of Black. So then we had Ricky Starks. Speaking of titles, again, so many titles here in this company. We had Ricky Starks defending the FTW Championship against Danhausen. Danhausen hit a pump kick and a Northern Light suplex, but Ricky fought out. And Danhausen avoided a spear, rolled Starks up for a near fall. Danhausen, after that, Sparks. I almost called him Ricky Sparks. That's going to be his new name from now on. We're going to call him Ricky Sparks. Ricky Starks, out of nowhere, hits a spear. And we're less than a minute into this match. He hits that spear. He covers him. He gets the pin. And honestly, this match went about as long as it needed to go. This did not need to go much longer than it did. Ricky Starks retains the FTW title. So after the match, Starks asks for a microphone. He says he's still got more left in the tank, which of course he does. He just wrestled 45 seconds. He barely broke a sweat. So of course, he's got plenty left in the tank for another match. And we're going to wait and see who his challenger is. And all of a sudden, the challenge is accepted by Hook. They play Hook's music, and the place goes nuts for this kid. Now, we haven't seen Hook on television, it feels like, or in a match, in a while now, on either Dynamite or Rampage. It's sort of like he took a back seat for a while, heading into Forbidden Door, and even after Forbidden Door, I was starting to wonder what happened to Hook. They don't want to cool him off too much. And then he magically appears, and he certainly... It didn't sound like he had cooled off too much, the way the crowd reacted to him when he came out. He walked out, he was donning new orange trunks, and his father, you could hear Taz on commentary. You couldn't see him, but you could basically hear how proud he was, and he was losing his mind, he was going crazy, like he didn't know about this. And like it wasn't like he was freaking out, oh my God, Hook, what are you doing? You know, he sounded proud. So Hook laid in body shots, hit a pump handle suplex right away. I halfway thought that Starks was just going to take a powder out of the ring and say, you know what, on second thought, not tonight. I've got a Charlie horse in my leg. Why don't we do this a different day? And they would put it off. But ref held the belt up. They rang the bell. We went right into it. So Starks laid in strikes, hit a back suplex, but Hook flipped out of a hip toss. Starks crushed him with a spear. And instead of pinning him, he picked him up. He went for his Rochambeau finish. But as he went for the Rochambeau, Hook transitioned out of it, a beautiful transition, into the Red Room. And he sunk it in, and Ricky was trying to fight out of it. He rolled through, tried to roll his way out of it. Hook would not let go of the hold. And Ricky Starks had no choice but to tap out right away. The crowd explodes. We have a brand new FTW champion, and his name is Hook. And that is the second thing I called few weeks ago when I set this whole thing up, and I said, look, if they're going to do this match with Danhausen, here's how it has to go. The only thing is, and again, when I talked about putting the FTW title on Hook, and I think this played out beautifully here, but it makes all the sense in the world for Taz's son. That was my logic, for Taz's son to be the one to take that FTW title from Ricky Starks. It couldn't be anybody else. It's not like it's an official title anyway. But if anybody was going to hold the FTW title after Ricky Starks, you have Taz's son, who's one of the most over acts in the entire company. I mean, it just made sense. It's just common sense. So he can walk around now with it for a while. Actually, he could be the one to retire it. Because if we're being perfectly honest here, we don't need the FTW title. The FTW title is a cool thing now for Hook to have, and he can walk around with it over his shoulder. He can wear it around his waist. He can carry it around with him. Over time, I think you just quietly let it fade away. And Hook can kind of continue to climb the ladder here in this company. He might even defend it. But I don't think we need to see Hook going out and defending it for months, and then somebody beats him for it, and now he's trying to get it back. We've already had the moment. The moment was him tonight, winning that championship that his father created, winning it for the very first time, the visual of him holding it, right? You can't replicate that moment. It's been done now. So I just think long term, as the weeks and the months go on, the best thing to do is to just quietly retire the title after a while and let Hook be the last ever FTW champion. I think he'd be the appropriate person for it. Hook has a lot of other bigger things in his future than this. But I thought this was great stuff. My only critique of what they did here, if it were me, I mean, I when I talked about the idea, again, it played out wonderfully. It played out exactly the way that I pitched it. But I would have held off until All Out in Chicago. In Chicago, 10,000 people, right? Great wrestling city, great wrestling market. One of the biggest pay-per-view events of the year. That's where I would have done it. So I would have had a few more weeks of Ricky Starks going on with this open challenge stuff. And then at some point later on next month, Hook answers the challenge. And again, Ricky is not ready for it. You know what? Not tonight. Or let's talk about this, you and I, right? We're like this. Come on, we're a team. But ultimately, or if you want to, you could have had where Hook comes out at the pay-per-view. You could do that too. I probably would have promoted it for a week or two in advance, but at All Out in Chicago, you have him win the championship, and then you get that big explosion from the crowd. I mean, hell, I might even open the pay-per-view with it. So that would be my only critique. It felt like they just rushed into it without, you know, promoting it and making people want it. They went for the surprise here, and it worked. And that's fine, too, because ultimately we're all going to end up in the same place anyway. After the break, Tony Schiavone was in the ring to interview a distraught Ricky Starks who had Powerhouse Hobbs behind him. So this was another big angle that followed the big moment with Hook winning the title here. This was a total babyface promo from Ricky Starks. He said that he got that FTW title and people said that it was a noose, but he turned it into a tie. Said he made the leather and the metal into gold. He was tired of being told that he's got to wait until next month. You got to wait for your chance until next year. He said his time is now. And the people cheered. People cheered for him. He started to mention Powerhouse Hobbs. He mentioned Hobbs' name. And at the first mention of Hobbs' name, Powerhouse Hobbs blindsides him, levels this guy with a clothesline. I mean, he clobbered him with this clothesline. And he knocks down Ricky Starks, and everybody is shocked. They cut to the crowd. People can't believe it. He picks him up. He plants him with that Arn Anderson-esque spine buster. And the boos rain down on Powerhouse Hobbs. So this was not a situation where he attacked Ricky Starks. Ricky's the annoying heel. And everybody cheered Hobbs. Hobbs is a big badass babyface. Just the opposite. People love Ricky Starks. They've been cheering for Ricky Starks now for months. It's like when The Rock was a heel back in 98. And almost overnight, the crowd just willed him into being a babyface. He went into Madison Square Garden at SummerSlam that year. We have SummerSlam coming up in a few days. SummerSlam that year, Triple H against The Rock in a ladder match in Madison Square Garden. Triple H went in there representing DX, the babyface. Rock was the heel representing the Nation. And Rock lost the match that night, and everybody cheered and loved that Triple H won the belt. And it was, I think, basically the next night. I mean, it was right after that. Like, you could just tell. You couldn't resist anymore. Like, this guy was a babyface. The crowd embraced The Rock as a babyface. And Ricky Starks could be a star on the level of what The Rock was back in 98. I'm not saying The Rock today, but The Rock in 98 when he was transitioning into that babyface role. That, I feel like, is kind of where Ricky Starks is right now. The fans have dictated that they want to see this guy positioned as a babyface. They want to cheer for him. They like him. They find him entertaining. And so you could see it here. This was the turn. And you heard it in his words during his promo. So I didn't see this coming. I didn't see Hobbs blindsiding him here. That surprised me. And I'm torn on this, actually. I'm kind of in the middle on this. On the one hand, I am sad that we never got to see Starks and Hobbs have a proper run with the AEW tag team titles. And if it were my choice, I probably would have put the belts on them over Lee and Swerve when they did. And I would have given them a run with the championships. I understand them wanting to put the belts on the babyfaces since we already had heel champions. You know, I get that. But it's really a shame that they never had a run of their own with the belts because I thought they were a good team. We never really got to see them do too much together, but I thought they worked well together. They were a very good tag team. On the other hand, what you saw here, like I said, was the birth of babyface Ricky Starks, and the people have been wanting it. I think he could go on and have a very successful singles run. just like Powerhouse Hobbs should be able to have a very successful heel run. He's somebody who I could see being primed as a challenger eventually for Wardlow in the TNT title. Where the hell has he been, by the way? No Wardlow on the show tonight. But he's somebody who could be primed for a run or a program with Wardlow for that championship at some point. But now we're going to go and get Starks and Hobbs coming up next. So Team Taz is toast. But if we're being perfectly honest here, Team Taz has been, Team Taz has been toast for probably over a year now. The Team Taz thing was very weird. You know, they kicked Brian Cage out of the group, and that in and of itself is bizarre to me. The booking or the lack of booking of Brian Cage. Even Brian Cage has no idea how Brian Cage is being booked or why Tony Khan decided to roll over his option and keep him when Cage thought that his contract was going to be up and he was going to be able to walk. And Tony Khan kept him. Why? I still have no idea. So they kicked him out of the group, and we had Starks and Hobbs and Hook. Well, then Hook started to get over on his own as a babyface, and without any explanation, he was no longer hanging out with Starks and Hobbs. He just started doing his own thing, and then he was doing the thing with Danhausen. So Team Taz was down to a literal tag team. Taz doesn't even manage. He doesn't even come down to the ring with them. And even the two of them together, we didn't get to see them on television nearly enough. That's what I mean when I say I'm really bummed that we never got a real run with them as a team on this show. So Team Taz has been a fucking mess now for a while. Team Taz hasn't been really much of a faction for the better part of a year, if not longer. So even though tonight was the official destruction of Team Taz, let's be perfectly honest here. It's been pretty much over and done with for a while now. So we had Sammy Guevara up next with Ty Conti in his corner, taking on Dante Martin, who had Sky Blue in his corner. We had the two couples here in this segment. We had a lot of flying from these two early on. Dante had the advantage. Sammy took over during the break. And after the break, Dante went for a big springboard move out to the floor. On the way down, though, he got wrecked. Sammy caught him with a knee strike on the way down, and it connected the way it sounded. The sound that he made, the slap in the knee, it sounded good. It looked good. Guevara went for the GTH, but Dante avoided it back in the ring and landed a suplex. So Ty Conti tried to distract Dante, and he ignored her. He went for his double jump moonsault. This was his second attempt at the move here in this match. Guevara, though, avoided it. He landed a double jump cutter of his own and followed that up with the GTH for the win. After the match, Sammy continued to assault Dante. Sky Blue jumped into the ring. Now, Sky Blue is in there. She's wearing, like, jeans and a t-shirt. And she jumps into the ring to try to stop him from beating up her boyfriend. Conti got in her face. Anna Jay runs down to the ring and hits Sky Blue in the back. And they're stomping on her until Ruby Soho runs down with Ortiz and Eddie Kingston to clear them from the ring. This got a huge pop, and at first I'm thinking, wow, that's a huge pop for Ruby Soho. And then I saw Eddie Kingston, I said, oh, okay. I said, there's no way this crowd is chanting that loudly for Ruby Soho. The only night that they're chanting that way for Ruby Soho is the night that she debuted last year. She's not getting reactions like that anymore. But then I saw Eddie Kingston, and Eddie always gets a great reaction. So then it made sense. Sky Blue does not belong on TV. Sky Blue is not ready for the main show. She's not ready for TV yet. Anna Jay in the beatdown, she looked very tentative when they were stomping and you know beating down on her. And I'm not saying that she can't grow into the role. Again, this is only week one officially of her being a heel here on this show. But I think it's pretty clear based on this that it's going to take some time. Now, speaking of couples, in the very next segment, Tony Schiavone was in the ring to introduce Jungle Boy, Anna Jay's significant other. I mean, they're not married, but of course they are together. So out comes Jungle Boy for an interview segment. Luchasaurus comes walking out with him. They walk out through the babyface tunnel. And Luchasaurus comes out. Luchasaurus is still in his heel gear. He is still dressed in black, not the green. So keep note of that. They get in the ring, and Shivani wants to know what is on Jungle Boy's mind. Jungle Boy takes the mic, and he shouts. Now he's getting really hot, right? He's getting really animated now. And he shouts that Christian Cage was the biggest pussy that he has ever met in his entire life. And he said that he's talked all kinds of bullshit about his family. And Christian is the most relevant that he has ever been in his entire career. Jungle Boy said that Christian is supposedly upset with him over eliminating him from some battle royal a year ago and costing him a bonus, which didn't make much sense, he said. He said the real reason is that he is strapped for cash because his wife divorced his bitch ass. I had no idea that Christian got divorced. I assume that's true, and they're not just making that up. That's the first I'm hearing of it. So, a little bit of gossip, I guess, that I wasn't aware of. He said Christian is just another evil loser like the ones from the movies with a turtleneck and a small prick. And the crowd went, ooh. And Jungle Boy picked up on that, and he said, that explains the wife. The crowd went, oh. So he was getting all kinds of reaction. He was coming out with the one-liners, you know, one right after the other here. He then addressed Luchasaurus and said that, as far as explaining why Luchasaurus is out there with him, says all Luchasaurus was doing was protecting Christian for him because nobody was going to get a hold of Christian before he did. And he maintained that he and Luchasaurus are still friends. So then Jungle Boy started to get serious. And he was talking about, I think he said, was it 3 years ago, he said. I think it was the same year that he signed with AEW. His father had passed away. And he's talking about being in a hole with his uncle. And he is shoveling dirt. He is digging the hole that his father was buried in. As he is starting to talk about this very serious story, they cut to the back. And we see Christian standing next to a giant monitor, a giant flat screen, interrupting him, trying to get his attention. Jungle Boy, he did not know that Christian was talking because he was so laser focused on his promo and he was looking straight ahead into the camera. We could hear Christian. And I think the people in the building could probably hear Christian. Jungle Boy just kept talking. It took like 10 seconds for him to finally stop and then look and see that Christian was up on the video wall. So Christian said that he draped the leather jacket over Jungle Boy after he had attacked him that time and gave him the concerto. But he could stop worrying about his departed father because the next thing he'll drape over him is a body bag. And then he can share a final resting place next to his dearly departed father. He said Jungle Boy told him all of his secrets and now he is going to prey on his weakness. So a couple of things first. That was the best promo of Jungle Boy's life. Jungle Boy has never cut a better fucking promo than the one that we had here tonight. And yes, he had the benefit of being able to throw out a lot of four-letter words, and he said pussy, and he said shit, and he said all kinds of stuff, right? He said prick, right? He threw all these words out there that I'm sure every wrestler would love to have the freedom to go out there and say, and it's an easy cheat pop when you throw some of those words out there. It's like dropping an F-bomb. So yes, he was throwing the naughty words around. But it made sense in the context of the promo. This guy was put out of action. His career was almost ended by this guy. And every week since, we've had Christian, who was yelling at his mother when Jungle Boy's mother and sister were at ringside that night. And then talking about his dead father. And then trying to, you know, convince his friend to come with him and to turn on Jungle Boy. All these horrible things that Christian has done and said to and about Jungle Boy. I'd be pissed too. So it made sense that he would come out there, he would be angry, he would be animated, he would start cussing, he was dropping all kinds of dirt and bombs and talking about his divorce and all this stuff. He looked like somebody who wanted to rip this guy limb from limb. So I was okay with that. I thought he showed really good fire here, and I thought he killed it. I think tonight Jungle Boy became Jungle Man. That's the one thing I've always said I'm not sure of when it comes to Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy can go on to be one of the biggest stars in the entire company. But his promos, he needed work on his promos. Now, his promos have improved a little bit from where they were even a couple of years ago. But what we saw out of him tonight, if he can channel that and we can get more of that in the future, maybe without all the cussing, because I think he could cut a good promo even without it. I mean, I like what we saw from him tonight. If he could figure out that part, then he's got all the tools. You know, he can go in the ring. The fans love him, right? He's an easy babyface to cheer for. And if he can talk on top of the work, then he's got all the tools to be as big of a star as Tony Khan wants him to be. The other thing, though, is that I am still not convinced that the dinosaur is not turning soon. And I know they're trying to explain that they never really were apart, and it was all part of the plan. It was all, you know, part of the ruse, and Jungle Boy just wanted him to occupy him until he was ready to come back so that he could get him. And yeah, I understand all of that, but I don't buy into it completely. I still am not convinced that this is not all a ruse on the part of Christian Cage, and that that is where the angle is ultimately going to go. I mean, look, he was still out there wearing black. It wasn't like he was back in his old gear. He was back in the green mask. He was still out there wearing black. You might not think that's a big deal, but I think it does mean something. I think it is symbolic of something. So I noticed that right away, that he came back out there in the black. But I also just would hate it if they just completely abandoned the whole heel Luchasaurus thing. Because I was done with the dinosaur as he was before. You know, turning heel and smashing people and putting him through tables and everything and wearing the all black. I liked it. I liked the turn. I liked where they were going with him. And I thought he would make a great roadblock to throw in front of Jungle Boy. If Christian Cage, I mean, as great of a heel as he is, it's exactly the kind of thing that he would do. You want to get to me, you got to go through him first. And that's where I thought that this was going. So I am just kind of selfishly hoping that they have not given up on this. And you know, otherwise, the excuse that Jungle Boy gave for it, I thought, was actually pretty weak. Well, you know, he was beating up Matt Hardy and all of these innocent victims because I told him to, because, you know, I just wanted him to make sure that Christian was 100% for when I came back. I don't know. The explanation to me rings hollow. It's weak, unless this is all part of a bigger work on the part of Christian Cage. The way that I see this playing out, if I'm right about that, we go to All Out, we get the match between Christian and Luchasaurus, Christian rather, and Jungle Boy, and that's where Luchasaurus, I can't even say turns, because I feel like the turn has already happened. Jungle Boy just doesn't know it. But that's where he costs Jungle Boy the match. That's my prediction and hope for where this is going. Backstage, we had the Young Bucks. They were looking very depressed. I guess it's, I think Nick Jackson's birthday tomorrow? Is that what they said? I know one of them has a birthday tomorrow. They were walking the hallway being filmed by Brandon Cutler, and all of a sudden here comes Hangman Page. And they awkwardly bump into each other, and it's like friends who haven't seen each other in 20 years. They don't know what to say to each other. They wish Hangman a happy birthday. I guess today was his birthday. He says, hey, isn't it your birthday tomorrow? Oh, happy birthday. And the Bucks are like, you know what? There's something that we have to get off our chest. And before they could say anything, here comes the Dark Order. Here comes John Silver and Alex Reynolds, and I think Preston Vance was in there. And they all walk up to Hangman Page and are, you know, they're just kind of celebrating with Hangman Page. And the Young Bucks never did get to tell Hangman what it was that they wanted to tell him. They kind of left them alone, and they walked off. And so maybe if Omega is not ready to be back in time for All Out, it could be that we end up with the Bucks and Hangman as a trio in that tournament, going after the Trios titles. Or if the Dark Order wants to compete for the trio, and there's another one I forgot to mention, the Dark Order. But if the Dark Order wants to compete for the Trios titles, they could even work a story where they're like, hey, Hangman, why don't you team with us? We'll go after the Trios belts. But the Bucks want to team with Hangman and go after the Trios belts. And then he kind of has to choose. Do I go with these guys or do I go with these guys? That could be a hedge against Omega. If Omega, you know, in case he's not back in time, maybe they go with Hangman instead. We had a handicap match with Swerve Strickland taking on Tony Nese and Smart Mark Sterling. The stipulation is that Keith Lee was banned from ringside. Nese controlled the action during the break. Swerve was smart enough to kick Nese into Sterling, which caused an official tag. So now he was tagged into the match. Nese refused to leave the ring, so Swerve gave him a hard right hand and a double stomp over the top rope to the floor. Sterling was forced to get into the ring. Swerve gave him a hard kick and pinned him for the win. This went about 5 or 6 minutes. After the match, they cut to the back, and we see Keith Lee sleeping on the floor. That's what this looked like to me when they first showed it. Keith Lee is in the back in that area where they do the interviews against the backdrop. And we see Keith Lee. It looks like he's taking a fucking nap. It looks like he was in the back and he had some like milk and cookies and he decided to go to bed. Standing over him, though, is Josh Woods, who evidently laid him out in the back. So he's standing over Keith Lee's body. They cut back to the arena. They show Strickland is confused. He's looking up at the screen at, you know, what's going on. He gets blindsided from behind by Tony Nese. You know, I know that Josh Woods has been wrestling on Dark for them since probably, I think, late last year. But he has not been shown on Dynamite. So this appearance here didn't mean much. When they cut to him, it got no reaction. It got no reaction out of me. It was, at first, honestly, I was looking at this and I'm like, who the fuck is that? And then it was mentioned on commentary, Josh Woods, and I know the name. I'm not, you know, totally familiar with his work or anything like that, but I know who he is. But I'm looking at that and I'm just going, you know, this is what they're coming up with for Swerve and Keith Lee. It feels beneath them. If they're heading into a match in a program now with Tony Nese and Josh Woods, it just feels beneath them. It feels underwhelming that this is what they have in mind for them here, coming out of their big tag team title win. They were riding that wave of momentum when they won the belts a couple of weeks ago. And Keith Lee cut that very passionate promo at the end about his friend who has cancer and everything and what this meant to him. And then we had that segment last week, which was the worst thing on the entire show, with the cake in the face. And you know what? I like Smart Mark. I think he does a good job in his role. But this is becoming a pattern now where somebody wins a championship. Or even before they win the championship, I guess. Because in the case of Wardlow, it was before he even won the freaking title. He beats MJF at Double or Nothing. And what do they have Wardlow doing, who at that point is right white hot in this company? He goes right into a feud with Smart Mark, and he's feuding with 20 security guards on TV in a handicap match. And so now we're seeing it play out again with Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. They win the tag team titles, and now they're, you know, right into a feud here with Smart Mark. So I just think it's going to be a tough sell to get people to really care about any of this. We got a video package from the House of Black. We had Aleister Black talking about Miro and saying that he would place him on the throne rather than have him worship it. Brody King challenged Darby Allin. They showed highlights of all the times that Brody King has been beating up Darby Allin on TV and all the times that he has been powerbombing him through tables at the mall, at Comic-Con this past weekend. Again, they ambushed Darby. He choked him out and laid him out across one of the tables there. He says, this has to end. You know, he goes, Darby, you know, you have this tattoo. I think Darby has a tattoo on his chest that talks about caskets or being put in the ground or whatever it says. So he issues a challenge to him for a coffin match, and he asks him what kind of flowers he wanted for his headstone. They didn't say when the match would be taking place, but we are going to be getting a casket match between Darby Allin and Brody King. And hey, maybe they'll have the kind of match that Mil Muertes and Rey Fénix had in Lucha Underground. That is still one of my favorite matches that I have seen in many, many years. It was the first Grave Consequences match. It was season one of Lucha Underground, and Fénix was, you know, kind of on the smaller side. Mil Muertes, this big guy, not like big and tall, but just, you know, a bigger guy. And they had this incredible casket match. The best casket match that I've ever seen any company put on. Maybe these two will be able to channel that same dynamic. And, you know, somebody actually emailed me. It's funny I mentioned Lucha Underground. I guess I have Lucha Underground on the brain because I was just answering someone's question earlier about it. And it struck me that, you know, as I think about wrestling over the last 20 years or so, outside of WWE, and to be honest with you, WWE hasn't always been so enjoyable for the better part of the last 20 years either. But, you know, WCW died, ECW died, and since then we had Ring of Honor, we had TNA, now we have AEW. For a while I was into Billy Corgan's relaunch of the NWA. Lucha Underground is probably, I would say, especially those first couple of seasons, maybe the most fun I've had watching a weekly wrestling show since the days of the Monday Night War, since WCW died and went away. Like it was, I miss it. Every now and then I'll think about it because I kind of forget it and then I'm reminded of it in some way. And I'm like, man, I really miss watching and reviewing that show on the podcast. And it's really, it fucking sucks that it never got a proper ending. And it just sucks that it had to end the way that it did. But I have nothing but positive things to say about those early seasons of Lucha Underground and just, you know, Dario Cueto. And, you know, again, they introduced me to a lot of wrestlers I hadn't seen before, like Penta and Rey Fénix and, you know, others. So anyway, that's my homage to Lucha Underground. I have a tear, a single tear that comes streaming down my face every now and then when I think about it. We had Miyu Yamashita from Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling, one-on-one with Thunder Rosa for the AEW Women's Championship. Yamashita pinned Thunder Rosa in Tokyo Joshi Pro only a few weeks ago. That earned her the right to challenge her for the AEW Women's title here in the States, and so she traveled over here, and this was the big title match. Yamashita grabbed an arm twist early on. That kicked off a whole series of mat wrestling and reversals between both women. They went back and forth. Rosa came back with a hip toss and a crucifix for a two count. She attempted a suplex on the apron. Yamashita, though, escaped and landed a leg sweep. Took her legs out right from underneath her. She attempted a dive from the apron to the floor. Rosa, though, moved and landed a shotgun dropkick and a big chop on the floor. After a break, Rosa went up top. Yamashita, though, caught her with a kick, knocked her back into the ring. Rosa attempted a fire thunder driver to put her away, but Yamashita avoided it, landed a hard roundhouse kick for a close near fall. Both women traded roll-ups in a basically the same spot that led to the finish in their first match. So the finish of their first match was actually very surprising, I think, to a lot of people when they showed it on Dark. And that is one aspect of this that I like. Between Pac defending his All-Atlantic title, and they showed highlights tonight of the most recent match where he defended his championship overseas. And I believe they're showing these matches on Dark every week. They did that with the first match with her and Yamashita. They showed the whole thing on an episode of Dark. And I like that aspect of it. I like it when they have these talents that go overseas, and they compete in these other promotions, when they get the footage and they can air it on their own shows. I hope they do more of that. Same with Pac. Pac's the traveling champion. He's going all around the world. I do think it would be nice to see him on the actual fucking shows every now and then on TNT and TBS. But it was a play off of the finish to their match where it was a bunch of rolling reversals back and forth. And then finally, Yamashita caught her and pinned her. So it wasn't like she knocked her out. She hit her finish. It was almost like a flash, fluky kind of pin. So they did the same thing here to try to tease you that history might repeat itself and this time she might win the championship. But this time Thunder Rosa kicked out. And in the end, Rosa landed the Fire Thunder Driver to retain her women's championship. I thought the work here was solid. You know, those kicks from Yamashita are lethal. But it was missing something. I don't know, it was just missing that extra something to kind of take it to that level of great. It was good. It wasn't great. And I think part of the problem is, in fact, I know part of the problem for me and probably a lot of people who are watching this show tonight, you know, it's tough when there's somebody in there who isn't, I mean, look, there are talents from certain promotions, whether it's in New Japan or Mexico, wherever it might be, who have a very big name. And so a lot of people will know who they are. They would have at least heard of them or seen some of their work if they get brought in for a special attraction or something. We look at Forbidden Door. Yamashita is the biggest name, I think, in Tokyo Joshi Pro. I think she's sort of the ace of that company. And a lot of people I know are very familiar with her work. But they didn't do a good enough job, I don't think, of really introducing you to who she is and why she's such a big deal. And at least, especially in this building tonight in front of this crowd, I don't know, she came out and, you know, you could tell. You could tell that not a lot of people were really all that familiar with her. So that probably was a very big part of why this just felt like it was missing something. This whole reign feels like it's missing something. And it's nothing I think that Thunder Rosa is doing. She's had some good matches. The match with Serena Deeb and, you know, her match with Toni Storm. You know, the wrestling has been solid. The wrestling has been fine. It just feels like she is, you know what she's missing? Thunder Rosa is missing that one rival that she used to have in Britt Baker. And then she beat Britt. And now she doesn't really have that one rival to step into the ring with. She's going from person to person, and even on the horizon, who is that person that she's really going to mix it up with and they're going to have that big program with? I don't know who that person is. You know, they're kind of building Athena, it looks like, for Jade Cargill. I thought it was going to be Chris Statlander. Maybe Statlander is going to go after Thunder Rosa. Maybe that's going to be the match at All Out. You know, All Out is coming up. I mean, it's not that far away. You know, we're about 6 or 7 weeks out from All Out. So we'll get a pretty good sense soon enough of who that challenger is going to be. Statlander would make a babyface against babyface, but I can't think of anybody else right now who I would rather see in the ring with Thunder Rosa than her. What do? You put her back in there with Britt Baker? I wouldn't do that. Doesn't seem like Jamie Hayter is being primed for that spot. If Athena is occupied with Jade Cargill, that leaves Statlander for that spot. I don't think it's going to be Ruby. It's not going to be Anna Jay. It's not going to be any of them. Maybe Mercedes will show up. We'll see. Maybe if a Mercedes pulls on into AEW, that would be a hell of a match to book for All Out. I'm just saying. Plant the seed. Watch it grow. The main event was the return of the American Dragon. Bryan Danielson one-on-one with main event Daniel Garcia of the Jericho Appreciation Society. Chris Jericho sat in on commentary for the match. This was Danielson's first appearance since Double or Nothing, since the Anarchy in the Arena match where he was injured. The belief is that he had a concussion that was never officially announced by Tony Khan. Or Danielson or anybody officially, but that's what it was. And Danielson came out of the gate hot right from the opening bell. He delivered a running drop kick in the corner. Garcia got the advantage briefly. He pulled up the mats outside of the ring. Danielson, though, sat him on a chair in the corner by the barricade and built up a head of steam and came at him with a running drop kick. So remember what I mentioned about the mats, because that would come into play later on in the match. Back in the ring, Danielson landed the front face drop kick that he does off the top rope, only this time he was not getting up. He was not nipping up. He was still laying prone on the mat. The referee went over to check on him. He was selling that he might be concussed. He was selling possible head trauma. He is coming back from a head injury. And so they were playing off of that, and the referee is checking on him to make sure that he's okay. Garcia took advantage. That gave him an opening. He sent Danielson into the ropes. Danielson coming off just sort of collapsed in a heap, fell back down to the mat. Outside the ring, Garcia sent Danielson into the ring steps and then gave him a DDT on the concrete that he exposed earlier in the match where he pulled up the mats. He gave this man a DDT on the concrete. That sent us into the final picture-in-picture break. Back from the break, Danielson was busted open. He wasn't busted open like the guys last week on the show. He wasn't even busted open the way Moxley was in the opening match. So he had some blood on his forehead. It kind of looked like right above his eyes, like in between his eyes. He had some blood. Nothing major. And Garcia was working him over until he got caught with an avalanche back suplex off the top. And he dropped this kid right on the back of his neck. Danielson came back with the yes kicks, put Garcia down flat on his back. And he had the wrist capture that he does right before he sets up for those stomps on the mat. Garcia, though, got out of it. Danielson, though, reversed into the cattle mutilation. And then he let that go, and he hit a tiger suplex for a near fall. Garcia came back with the hammer and anvil elbows that we usually see Danielson and Moxley doing. Danielson comes back with some of his own, hits a shoulder capture suplex. That gets a two count. And the two of them traded strikes. Danielson connected with the running knee strike, tried to lock on the lapel lock. Garcia, though, rolled out to the floor. Danielson caught him with the diving running knee off the apron, and he rolled Garcia back inside. And when Danielson went to go crawl back into the ring to follow up, someone, we only saw a black-gloved hand, reached up from underneath the ring skirt, from under the ring, and grabbed a hold of Danielson's foot. and would not allow him to get back into the ring. And Danielson looks back. He sees this. He's trying to kick him away and fight him off. And finally, he kicked this guy away. But it was enough of a distraction to where when Danielson gets back into the ring, Garcia catches him with a pile driver. So more damage to the head. And then he locks him in a sharpshooter. And he turns him over and he leans back. And then he completely wrenches as far back as he can go with the sharpshooter. He's cranking back on it. Danielson slowly trying to crawl his way towards the ropes until finally he just passes out. He passes out from the pain. The referee stops the match. And then we see that it was Jake Hager underneath the ring who had grabbed at Danielson's foot. The referee didn't see it. And so main event, Daniel Garcia. Another fucking main event for this kid. How many of these has he had over the last 6 months or 9 months or however long he's been around for? But he finally wins one. He's lost all of the big matches that he has had, basically, in AEW so far. This was the biggest win of his career. He got a win over Bryan Danielson. I wasn't exactly thrilled with how he got it, but I guess I'm not supposed to, given that he's a heel and he's part of a heel faction. It is what it is. But he got the win. He got the win. The Jericho group pulled a fast one on him. Jericho left the announce booth and ran down to the ring with all the other members to celebrate in the ring with Garcia. And up until the what I thought was the crappy finish, I'm sure, you know, again, it was done for storyline purposes. I just thought it was a lame finish. The match itself was very good. It was a very good main event. And I already saw some people on my timeline right before I went live, you know, asking about the head trauma stuff. And, oh, I don't know. Why are they doing that? It's classless or whatever. First of all, I wouldn't be surprised if it was all Danielson's idea. That's number one. In fact, I could almost guarantee you it was his idea. But I didn't mind it because it reminded me of what WWE did many years ago with Shawn Michaels when they did the angle back in 95 when Shawn came back and they did the whole post concussion syndrome angle. He was in the ring with Owen Hart. They did that whole angle on Raw where he collapsed in the middle of the match and they really tried to make it feel real. They wanted something big to do that night. That was the night after Survivor Series. On Nitro, they were doing the first Hogan Sting match for the first time, so they wanted a counter with something big, and that was what they came up with. And then Shawn came back for the Royal Rumble. His doctors were like, oh, he may never wrestle again, but of course he came back. Is he coming back too? I mean, they built a whole storyline around this big comeback story for Shawn Michaels. And I don't know. It kind of reminds me of that. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't really bother me. Danielson, though, is clearly headed for a match with Chris Jericho. And now we know Jericho is challenging Jon Moxley for the interim title in 2 weeks. Might we see Bryan Danielson get involved in the way that Jake Hager got involved here? Not that he's going to be hiding under the ring, but might Danielson cost Jericho the championship in 2 weeks? I think it's a safe bet. And that then leads to Moxley doing whatever he's going to be doing it All Out, probably Punk if they can get him back. And you do Jericho one-on-one with Bryan Danielson in Chicago. That's got to be the match, I think, for the next pay-per-view. So that's how they went off the air. That was Dynamite Tonight, a much better episode than the one we got last Wednesday, which I think is... I'm pretty sure that is the lowest, those are the lowest poll numbers that we have gotten when I put the Twitter poll up for Dynamite was last week's show. And it was still over the 50%. It was over the equator line, but it was definitely lower than it usually is. Now, the card for Rampage this Friday, we've got Matt Sydal going one-on-one with Lee Moriarty. Ethan Page goes one-on-one with Leon Wright. He's Leon Ruffin. I still think of him as Leon Ruff. But I guess now he's Leon Ruffin since he can't be Leon Ruff anymore. We have Anna Jay against Ruby Soho. And we have Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh taking on Best Friends. The plan right now is probably no Rampage coverage on Friday. Because I think what I'm doing is we're going to cover SmackDown on Friday here on the channel. And we will do our SummerSlam predictions that night as well. So we'll probably go live at 10:15 while Rampage is on. We'll do SmackDown. We'll do the... Because all about SummerSlam this weekend. You know, Rampage, if anything big happens, can wait for the Sunday show. So that's the plan right now. Wednesday, next Wednesday on Dynamite, we have the Undisputed Elite. They are back. So I talked about Adam Cole earlier and Kyle O'Reilly being hurt and being out. Well, they're back. They're back next week. They showed the graphic with them and the Bucks and Bobby Fish, and they're all supposed to be back together on TV next week. We've got Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm, Thunderstorm. They're back together taking on Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. And Christian Cage goes one-on-one with Matt Hardy. And the big news that I briefly mentioned at the beginning of the stream is that AEW is making its Canadian debut in October. And they couldn't just swing it a month earlier. Couldn't swing it a month earlier. Tony Khan was talking about how, you know, 2023, he was hopeful that they could do it. And I said, all right, well, maybe there's logistical reasons why they can't do it in September. And then they go and announce that they're doing it 4 weeks later. So instead of a pay-per-view, they're going to get Dynamite and they're going to get Rampage on October 12 and October 13. For whatever reason, they're doing Rampage on Thursday that week. I don't know if they're taping it Thursday or if they're going live on Thursday, but back-to-back nights in October, they are coming to the Coca-Cola Coliseum in Toronto. And I looked up the Coca-Cola Coliseum, and based on what I am seeing, it is a building that does not even fit 10,000 people for wrestling. So they will not have any issues packing that building. It's just too bad they couldn't find a bigger venue for it. So that is the official Canadian debut for AEW. All you Canucks up there will not have to wait too much longer to see your first AEW show in your native land, since you're too lazy to fly down here to the States and see one of them down here. Oh, we got our Dynamite poll. I'm going to piss off all the Canucks. Steve in the chat? I don't want to piss off Steve. Our own Steve Mello, who is responsible for all of this wonderful artwork. He is a Canuck. What did you think of Dynamite? Fight for the Fallen edition. 79.9. Call it 80%. Thumbs up. Much improved from what you guys had said about this show last week. 11% thumbs in the middle and 8% thumbs down. At Solomonster is the handle on Twitter. You guys know the place to go. You should already be following me on there. I don't know what the hell you're waiting for. And you can go and you can vote in the poll as well. We have a lot of polls that are going to be going up because we have a lot of events coming up this weekend. We do have SmackDown on Friday night. We have SummerSlam on Saturday. We have Ric Flair's final match. Again, it's hard for me to sit here and say that with a straight face. But it is supposed to be. It is supposed to be Ric Flair's final match on Sunday. By the way, John Moxley, you got something to say?
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
All right, that's what I thought. All right, let's get into your super chats here. You can drop a super chat. I will read them. If you have a question, I will do my best to answer them if I can. We are going to go all the way back to our boy, Hyru, who dropped $10 earlier on tonight. Said that people continue to throw around Johnny Gargano as Seth's replacement opponent. Johnny liked a tweet earlier that said Seth isn't good. Do you see Johnny being Seth's opponent, or do you have a name in mind? So for those who don't know, if you have been off of the internet or if you have been off of social media all day long, if you are working on the construction site all day long, if you're a window washer and you're hanging off the side of a building somewhere and you have no internet access, the match at SummerSlam this weekend between Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle is off. WWE made the announcement earlier today that Riddle suffered an injury after the show closing angle on Raw Monday night where Seth gave him a curb stomp on the ring steps. He is not hurt. It is not a real injury. It is a storyline injury. And supposedly the match is still going to happen. They might be saving it for Clash at the Castle in September. I don't know why they are delaying the match. The only explanation given was creative adjustments. And so this is what's going to happen now. We are under new leadership. We have a new regime in WWE. And much of what you saw on Monday night was the vision still of Vince McMahon. That show on Monday night was largely already put together by Vince McMahon before all the shit went down that led to him resigning. So Now Triple H is getting in there. He's putting his head together with all the rest of his team and all the writers and everybody, and there's going to be some adjustments made to creative. It's going to, you know, there's going to be changes like this. So that match is off the pay-per-view, and Seth Rollins is going to be at the show. Seth Rollins posted a tweet that was meant to look like it was legit, but he was still in character. He posted a tweet apologizing to the fans who bought a ticket on Saturday to come see him wrestle. He says he worked for the last 6 months to earn his spot on that show. He's very disappointed that he no longer has a spot on the show. Triple H, later in the day, quote-tweeted him. He saw the tweet, and he quote-tweeted him and basically said something to the effect of, "I hear you," I think is what he said. So obviously, there's going to be some kind of an angle, and Seth Rollins will probably end up, as he did at WrestleMania, with some kind of a mystery last-minute opponent. So yes, I've seen the Johnny Gargano memes, and I've seen his name floated around. First of all, I don't have a doubt in my mind now where Johnny Gargano is going to end up. Now with Triple H is in power, there's no reason for Johnny Gargano to go anywhere else. We already know Triple H thinks the world of him. Now Johnny Gargano might actually have a fighting chance on the main roster. I would never have said that 3 weeks ago. So Johnny Gargano will end up back in WWE. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Is he going to be the opponent for Seth Rollins? I would go a different way with it. I would go a different way. I'm not saying he can't be. Nobody knows for sure. Anybody who says they know for sure it's definitely going to be him or it's definitely not going to be him, they're bullshitting you. Nobody knows, right? Everything is up in the air. All the balls right now are up in the air in WWE as far as creative goes. I pitched my own idea on Twitter earlier today, and I like this idea, I think, even better. Rollins and Gargano, of course, they would have a tremendous match together. But if you remember at the end of Raw on Monday night when Rollins walked to the ring after the main event, he walked right past the bloodline. He walked right past Roman Reigns. As they were leaving, Rollins was coming out. And Rollins walked up to Roman. He laughed in his face. He did that hyena cackle as he walked by. So you have a little storyline reason if you want to plug this person in there. I would use the match to introduce a new face from NXT. I would like to see them introduce a new face from NXT. And you could certainly call up a Bron Breakker. You could call up a Carmelo Hayes. I don't like them in this spot because they're both champions. And I would rather not see somebody who's a champion in NXT get called up if they're still a champion and their run there is not done yet. Carmelo Hayes is the North American champion. Bron Breakker is the NXT champion. Tie up those loose ends first before you call them up. However, there is somebody else down there who has a tie-in to the bloodline. He's got that Samoan blood in him, and I think he's ready for a call-up right now, and his name is Solo Sikoa, who has been rumored for a main roster call-up after SummerSlam anyway. Why not Solo Sikoa to debut at SummerSlam? Fight on behalf of the bloodline. Maybe not officially, but that, you know, look, we all know he's the brother, he's the third Uso. So you have that little tie-in there if you want an explanation why him. I think that would be a great spot to introduce him in. He could win, he could lose. I mean, it almost doesn't even matter. But that's what I would do. We'll see. We'll see. Triple H is obviously, he's planning some kind of a big angle and some kind of a big match for Seth Rollins on this show. Oh, there's Tony. There's Tony again with the booger sugar. Tony, put the booger sugar down. Tony Khan, popping up on my screen. He has been snorting that shit since I went live on Friday night. I'm starting to think he's got a problem. So anyway, that's what I would do. Food Hive, thank you for the pair of super chats. Main event Garcia strikes again. And Garcia holds the record for the most main event. It feels like it. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury, thank you for the 5-spot. Congrats, Hook. As a dad, Taz has to love seeing his son get these huge reactions from the crowd. Oh, I'm sure he... How could he not? How could he not? Just to see his son going out there knowing that he's probably one of the biggest things in the entire company. And he's still young, right? He still has a lot to learn. He's still... I mean, the sky's the limit for Hook. Big Armada 1988 main event, Garcia strikes again. The Coug 97, proud of my boys, Roosh tonight, 3 weeks into AEW, and he gets a title shot. That shows how much Tony Khan is high on him. Now, Tony Khan is plenty high based on that picture I just saw. Ingobernables for life. Yes, I know the Coug. Coug, you got to tell me, I never asked you, are you down in Mexico, or are you just happen to be a big Lucha Libre fan? Or do you actually live down there? I don't think I ever asked you. Quintus Brown with the $5 super chat. Very good Dynamite tonight. They gave the ball to a lot of the promising young wrestlers, and nobody fumbled. I'm excited to see a babyface Ricky Starks. I am too. We talk about Hook. We talk about Jungle Boy and some of the young talents, MJF, wherever he is. You know, the MJF thing, it's pretty clear to me, you know, what's going on with the MJF thing. They're waiting for CM Punk to come back. It would be great if he came back at All Out. He beats Moxley, solidifies himself as the AEW World Champion. And I think it would be right after that. I really do. I think if not at the end of the pay-per-view, I think on Dynamite that week, you could see MJF come out and continue his storyline and begin, however long it's going to take for him to get there, his journey to the AEW World Championship through CM Punk. Playing out exactly the way that I said they should. The only person that MJF should beat to win that championship is CM Punk. And I think what they're doing is they're waiting until the fall. They're waiting until Punk comes back now, but they're waiting until the fall. You know, keep in mind, everybody has been talking this week about, you know, WWE and all the stuff with Vince and how is this going to affect things with their partners and sponsors. And, you know, they have their television deals that are going to be coming up soon, like towards the end of next year. AEW's television deals are also going to be coming up for renewal very soon. You know, sometime next year. So we're about to head into a time of year, this fall into the winter. You know, once all the TV shows come back in the fall and you have sweeps and everything else, it's a very important period as far as television goes. And I hadn't really thought about that relative to when their deals are up, but the timing would kind of make sense. And it makes me think that they're, you know, holding off. CM Punk is their ace in the hole. MJF. MJF is their ace in the hole. MJF, even though it feels like he's lost a lot of steam because he's nowhere to be found and no one's talking about him anymore, when he comes back, and he will, he's going to be the biggest thing in wrestling. What better time to bring him back than in that fall period when Warner might be looking very closely at the television numbers, which have dipped. They have taken a dip. They're going to be looking very closely at those television numbers. You get an MJF back. You've got your hottest angle in the entire company. Is that why Tony Khan is holding him out? It could very well be that he's looking towards that next big TV deal, and he's looking at MJF as his ace in the hole. So that's where I think they're going with the MJF stuff, and I think that's why they're holding off and nobody is saying anything. They want to get to the fall. They want to get to CM Punk being back, CM Punk beating Jon Moxley. And I bet you that's when we see MJF pop back up on TV. And then they just have to hope that the numbers begin to rise and that they can draw a correlation between MJF and maybe a rise in their television ratings. But yeah, that's going to be the real important period for them when it comes to trying to get interest, whether it's from a Warner Discovery renewal, or maybe some other network partner comes along and says, hey, you know what, let's talk. We'd love to have some conversations with you. So next year is going to be one of the more important years in wrestling in a very long time, because you've got the two biggest companies in the world, really, in the country, in the world, who both have television deals that are going to be coming up for renewal. Who knows? I mean, I don't see any reason why USA wouldn't want to work with WWE still, or even Fox. Maybe they all renew. Maybe not. who knows? Maybe AEW ends up on USA, and maybe Raw ends up on Apple TV or something. Who knows, right? Got all the streaming companies that are looking to get in. Netflix supposedly looking to get in on things. Amazon. It's going to be a very interesting year to follow. Doar. Building is loud tonight. Damn fun show. So Doar is at the building for tonight's show. EJ Slamp. Tonight was the Ricky Stark show, and I am here for it. He is so damn good and has everything to become the top guy in AEW. Reminds me of a young Rock. Well, how about that? How about that? What was I just talking about earlier? Yes, you are right. He absolutely reminds me of a young Rock as well. Spicy dried chicken without flavor. In my opinion, AEW needs to have an episode special on Dynamite and Rampage for their talent who are under 30 and younger. Not every week, but monthly. No, I don't think that's necessary. I think that's what Dark is for. I think you can, that's what the YouTube shows are for. You don't need to have an entire television show just dedicated to that alone. There's so much talent on the card, I don't think that would be productive. I think you're better off using Dark for something like that. Andrew Lima with the $5. Hey, Solomon, sir, I am at the DCU Center about to start Rampage. What a Dynamite. This is also John Cena's dad is in attendance. Hashtag heel turn. Mr. Cena in the house tonight at Dynamite. Timmy Too Dope. This might be my favorite show this year. Booking was great, and the wrestlers knocked everything out of the park. Also, who is Josh Woods? I'm telling you, that's what a lot of people probably had the same question seeing that. Who is Josh Woods? Who is that guy? Who is he? I thought it was Brody King at first. Like, facially, it, like, the camera was on the ground showing Keith Lee, and you could kind of look up and see this Josh Woods guy. And at first, I'm like, why is Brody King standing over Keith Lee? And then the tattoos and everything, I realized that's not Brody King. Shinakuma. Wow. Women of Wrestling is coming to Channel 9. Just saw the commercial. Channel 9 where? Channel 9 by you is very different than what may be Channel 9 by me. I have YouTube TV now, so I don't have Channel 9 anymore. Channel 9 here in New York is WWOR. It used to be UPN. That's where I used to watch SmackDown. Spicy dried chicken without flavor. Yuta, Garcia, Moriarty, Takeshita, Dante, Hook, Julia, Anna, and more younger talents. Tony Khan better keep them happy or else. Rodimus Prime with the $10 super chat. Good show all around. The promo from Ricky Starks was great. The turn from Hobbs was unexpected. Channel 9 is WGN. So, okay, well, that's in Chicago. That's what I said. Channel 9 is WGN. Okay, well, in New York, I would have no idea about that because we don't have WGN. Frankie Rodriguez, you think Hook and his character would get over in NXT during the Black and Gold era? Oh, absolutely, yeah. Oh, yeah. If they book him the same way? Yeah, of course. Not a doubt in my mind. I mean, eventually the smarky fans in that building would turn against him, but at first he would get over no problem. And then they would turn him into Roman Reigns in 2015. We've got Spicy Dried Chicken. The Yankees losing back-to-back to your Mets stings right there. Let me elevate this a little bit just so you can see. Enjoy this victory tonight. Well, I'm going to enjoy both victories. It's two back-to-back victories. Next month, the Mets will acknowledge the judge with 99 problems. King Bling Blah, if not Punk, Mox against Omega, Bucks team with Hangman. No, I mean, unless they can get Omega back in the next 2 weeks, there's not enough time. There's not enough time. He's not even ready yet. We don't even know for sure if he'll be on the pay-per-view. What are you going to do? You're going to have him just show up as a surprise and challenge him for the championship at All Out? I don't like that idea at all. Hulkling 93. $10 super chat. Thank you, Hulkling. Appreciate it. Until we get more World Subway Series, I find the Mets and Yankees rivalry to be pointless. Like the Giants and the Jets, they don't affect one another in the standings or the playoff chances. Oh, yeah, but it's always great to beat the Yankees. It's always great to rub salt in the wound and beat the Yankees. It's so much fun. Don't deny me my fun. The Braves are not that far behind the Mets. They are uncomfortably close to the Mets. We know how good the Braves are. So, as a Mets fan, I have been witness to many painful Septembers before. I know how quickly the worm can turn. So give me this moment. What is it? July 27th. Give me this moment and let me enjoy this. Let me soak this in. I don't know how long this will last. So I'm going to savor this. I'm going to savor the moment. Frankie Rodriguez, ever since you opened your YouTube channel, I always wondered if you would ever do a live watch-along for a pay-per-view event. So would you? No, I would not do a watch-along for a pay-per-view. I've tried that before. I've done one watch-along live on the channel, not for a pay-per-view. I'm trying to think if it was a Rampage or a Raw. I don't remember. And people liked it, but there were also an equal number of people who just prefer that I just go live when the show is over. And I prefer it also. I just like it better this way. So I probably would not do another one of those. I prefer the post-show reviews. But since you mentioned watch-along, we do watch-alongs of classic events if you are a YouTube channel member. So that's one reason you can become a YouTube channel member if you are not already a sound-off legend or a sound-off superstar. You need to hit that join button. Let me see, by the way, from our members who are in the chat. Let me see some of those emojis. Let me see some of those custom emojis from some of the members in the chat that you get. Spicy Dry Chicken, in my opinion, introduced another women's title belt called the AEW All-Pacific Championship. Rosa, Sheeta, and Storm would be great traveling champions. Yeah, that is a terrible idea. Alto Johnson, $4.99. No Wardlow tonight. Do you think Road Dogg has something to do with Road Dogg? Gives a shit about Road Dogg. What does Road Dogg have to do with any of this? Where did that come from? Who cares about Road Dogg? Frank Aquilino, great opener and great main event. Bryan Danielson has to be the wrestler of the year so far. I probably would go with Dax Harwood myself. There we go. There we go with some of those super chats or the emojis. I'm seeing the super chats go by. We've got Shaheen Alatar with the $25 super chat drop. Shaheen, thank you very much, brother. I appreciate you. He says, "Hey, Solomonster. Hope you and all my fellow listeners are doing well. Congrats on the Mets beating the Yankees. Hope they make it all the way. Take care. Stay safe. Wish everybody all the best." Thank you, Shaheen. Shouting out everybody in the live chat. Frank Aquilino. Great opener and great main event. Bryan Danielson. I read that already. I already told you. I think Dax Harwood might be my wrestler of the year so far. Boomerang, throwing one of those things and it comes right back and hits you in the head. It's the last time I ever use one of those. Never told that story before. I hit myself in the head with a boomerang. We've got, how about the Mets? Nothing is sweeter than sweeping the supposed best team in baseball in the Yankees. Let's go Mets. Yes. Frank Aquilino, off topic. In the old WCW NWA, they had U.S. tag and six-man tag team champions. Did those champions have actual belts? I believe so. I believe they did. Joseph Brooks, who are Brock Lesnar's top five rivals? I mean, Brock Lesnar's top five rivals. You got to have Undertaker. You've got to have Kurt Angle. You've got to have John Cena. And the rest, you know, I don't know that there's anybody else that I think has to be on that list. You could put Roman Reigns on there just because of how many fucking matches it feels like they've had. I think they've had 5 matches so far. I don't know if the match on Sunday is 5 or if this one is 6 coming up. I mean, Undertaker, Angle, and Cena would have to be the main ones. Robert Doyle, Sean was always better. Brett screwed Brett. Well, Robert, thank you for the $2. Joseph Brooks, you said WrestleMania 30 and 31 are the best WrestleManias in the past decade. What are the 2 best Royal Rumbles of the past decade? Well, I might actually say that 38 is on that list too. 38, I might even put 38 ahead of 31. I'd have to think about that. 38 was the best one since 30 and 31. But what are the 2 best Royal Rumbles of the past decade? Oh my God, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I enjoyed 2020. I feel like 2020 was a good one. A very good one. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I enjoy 2019 more than 2021. But I feel like they would be in these last few years. I feel like they would be the ones that were in the last few years. Spicy dried chicken. I double dog dare Ric Flair to do a tope suicida. Well, if you saw the story from earlier, Ric Flair said that he was thinking about doing, or somebody said that Flair was thinking about doing a dive. He wanted to do a dive in his last match on Sunday. And Charlotte, actually, was talking to ESPN and said that she talked her father out of it. She said, you didn't do dives when you were in your prime, and there's no reason for you to do any dives now. And so she apparently put that whole thing to bed. But, see, I have a theory about this. See, I think that she may have misunderstood what her father was asking. I don't think he was asking or saying that he wanted to do a dive in his match. I think he said he wanted to die in his match. Which could very well happen if he's got some big plan in mind to do some kind of crazy move. Either that or... Hey, look, Charlotte may have said to him, no diving, but... She didn't say anything about not doing her moonsault. Maybe Ric Flair's going to try one of those horrible Charlotte Flair moonsaults. Try to land on his feet. MTR, the MTR with the dollar. Thank you very much. Andre Israel. Please hit the Kevin Dunn button at least one more time. That is just too funny to me. Well, Mox is not here right now. Mox went to go get some more of that non-alcoholic beer that he's been drinking, so... When he comes back, we'll see what he has to say about Kevin Dunn. Clapstick 77, $9.99 super chat. You can travel through time and interview one person in the business any point in time. Who do you choose? I go with Heenan in 99, right after Monsoon died. We didn't hear enough real stories about them. I would probably go with Randy Savage after he left WWF and even after his WCW time. There was one interview. It was like the only shoot interview that he ever did. And I don't remember who it was with. You could find some clips of it online. He's sitting on his couch at home. But that's the only interview of that type that Savage ever did. And I feel like I would love to just sit down and pick his brain and talk to him. And especially about him leaving the WWF and, you know, other things. So I'd probably go with the Macho Man. I'd love to sit down with the Macho Man. Shin Akuma, 2 words, Ricky Starks, and what is next for Hobbs? What is next for Hobbs is Ricky Starks. They're going to go one-on-one. Quintus Brown, I think the Dynamite in Canada is when we get the return of Kenny Omega. He is from there. Yes, I'm aware. Although, he's not from Toronto, though, right? Kenny Omega, he's from Winnipeg, I thought. The mean streets. That's what that was, if you heard that. Rizzo with the $10 super chat. I agree that Johnny is staying in WWE. Also, doesn't he have some unfinished business in NXT? If I remember correctly, wasn't he attacked by Grayson Waller, or was that a way to write him off. That was a way to write him off. I don't think that there's any need to go back to that. If he's going to come back, he should be on the main roster. Johnny Gargano should not be in NXT. Johnny Gargano, if he comes back, it's time for him to move on to the main roster. He has no place in 2.0. He goes right to the main roster if he does come back. Ciampa is already on the main roster. Gargano should be there with him. Fire Panda 007. If COVID wasn't a thing, who faces Undertaker in his last match? What kind of match? And what goes, or who goes over? I'd have Druids down the entire ramp. He was going to wrestle AJ Styles in the ring, and instead they did the cinematic match. So I think it would have been AJ. I think AJ would have given him the best possible match that anybody could have given him. So I think the answer is AJ Styles. King Bling Blah. If Raw moves networks, two-hour Raws return likely? Yes, if WWE was to make a deal with a streaming service or another network and they moved Raw and NXT off of USA, that is the only way that we get two-hour Raws back. Because that's a USA decision. USA is obviously very happy having that extra hour. It would take them having to move networks, I think, to have a chance of going back to two-hour Raws. So anybody who's hoping for the return of two-hour Raws, then you better be hoping that they make a deal with somebody other than NBC Universal, because otherwise, those three-hour Raw shows, they're not going nowhere. Judicial protest with the $5 super chat. Hey, Solomonster, I was accused of romantically wrestling a few clients. Is this sexual harassment or legit sport? Says Robert Wallach. Well, I would suggest that you talk to a legal professional. Judicial protest. I think that's something that perhaps Stephen P. knew. Might be able to help you out. Dr. Scorpio, what would you do if the Mets won the World Series? Oh my God, what would I do if the Mets won the World Series? We'd have a fucking party. That's what we would do. We would have a fucking all-night stream, probably, if the Mets won the World Series. I'd be popping the champagne. I still got a bottle of that Jericho bubbly downstairs somewhere. HBKC83. Can you see MJF against Ricky Starks being one of the biggest rivalries in AEW for years to come? And the Bronx is the cleanest borough in the city now after the sweep. That's right. The Bronx is pristine. The sweep is complete. The broom has been busted out. There is not a speck of dirt on the floor. I love it. You could eat off the floor in the Bronx tonight. MJF and Ricky Starks, I could see that being a big rivalry. I don't know that it'll end up being the biggest, but I could see that being a big rivalry. Babyface Ricky Starks against heel MJF. Oh, absolutely. Could be one of the bigger rivalries. Clapstick, what's going on? $4.99 super chat. If Vince goes to jail, is Nails there to choke him out? Also, rumor is with Triple H taking over that Katie Vick is now all elite. That is an ugly rumor about Katie Vick. And Nails, as far as I know, I think Nails has been on his best behavior. And we do have that thing called Double Jeopardy. So I don't think Nails is going to be going back to the Slammer. Although I could see him maybe intentionally committing a crime to get sent back to jail. Can you imagine like the scene of Vince McMahon being walked down the hall and ushered into his cell? And as the door is opened and he walks into the cell, he looks in to find his cellmate, and there's Nails in the orange jumpsuit, right with the nightstick in his hand, doing that voice, the digitized voice, spitting up all over himself. We've got EJ Slemp as Solomonster from 2K beats the living shit out of Hulk Hogan. I always love seeing that. EJ, I know how much you love Cohen, Darling, and Hernandez, but what is your opinion on old Mets announcers like Kiner, Healy, McCarver, and Murphy? I wasn't really a Ralph Kiner guy. I mean, he was more before my time, so when I would hear Kiner on the air, he was already very old at that point and wasn't doing so much commentary. He would do the odd game here and there. So I don't really have an opinion on him so much. Fran Healy. I used to make fun of Fran Healy all the time because he would have his expressions. You know, there'd be like a pop-up. He'd be like, oh, it's a frozen rope. A can of corn. He loves saying can of corn. He loves using that expression all the time. It's a can of corn. But he had like a very distinctive voice. So I like Fran Healy. McCarver was okay. Seaver. I enjoyed Seaver. EJ says, NWA went from having Ricky Starks, Eddie Kingston, and Eli Drake to having Bully Ray, Mike Knox, and Tyrus. Makes me sad as someone who loves the NWA. Yeah, I don't know what happened with the whole Tyrus thing. I don't understand the obsession with Tyrus. I think he's their TV champion. Now he's replacing Nick Aldis in the main event of their next pay-per-view. Their 74th anniversary show is going to have fucking Tyrus in it. And I said this on the podcast the other day, and I'll say it again. I said, Tyrus should not be competing for a championship. The only belt that Tyrus should have is the one that is handed back to him by the person behind the counter at Macy's, handing it back to him with his receipt. That is the only belt that Tyrus should have. Fall of the NWA is nearly complete. Every time I see Tyrus on my screen. Tyrus is awful. Joshua Edwards, if you can name the new Triple H era, what would you call it? I like the sound of the new Vision era. Also, did you realize that Raw had no 24/7 title segment? Yes, I mentioned it. I actually reviewed Raw Live this week, which I usually don't do, and I definitely noticed that, and I mentioned that during the stream. As far as the current era, it just started. Can we even come up with a name for it yet? It just started. About the post-McMahon era? How about the common sense era? Right? Let's hope that this is the era of common sense. I want to call this the common sense era. Fire Panda 007. I love you, Solo Monster. Here's more money. That's what I love to hear. I love to hear someone profess their love and say, here's more money. Here's $2. Now I could take those $2 and I can buy one Mega Millions ticket. Mega Millions is up to $1 billion. The drawing on Friday night is over $1 billion. And one ticket is $2. So now I can buy my Mega Millions ticket. I can win the big one. And then maybe I can buy WWE. If WWE is listening to offers, I can take my billion, find a couple of investors. We can buy WWE and I can be co-owner of WWE. And then I can do whatever I want. Dr. Scorpio, favorite or worst SummerSlam match or moment? For me, the worst is still Lex Luger celebrating a countout victory for a world title. Still bugs me. I have a lot of favorite SummerSlam moments from over the years. I mean, there's been so many great SummerSlam matches. I can't possibly name them all, but the Luger thing was just embarrassing. I think the one that really pisses me off the most is when I think back to the Nexus in 2010 and how they got jobbed out, you know, by John Cena at the end of that show. Joshua Edwards, also, do you think we see Bray at SummerSlam? I'm going to say no. And Fire Panda, thank you for the super chat. I appreciate that. Very, very much. You guys came out tonight. You guys came out with the questions. Yeah, that Super Cena moment in 2010, though, was among the worst moments, I would say, in SummerSlam history. It still irritates the shit out of me. I could pose that question to you guys. If you were to buy yourself a Mega Millions ticket this week and you were the sole winner of the jackpot, right? Now, they take taxes out of it. You're not going to get the $1 billion in full. But let's say you got almost $1 billion, right? Even after taxes, let's say $600 million, right? Whatever it is. What would you do? What's the number one thing that you would do if you won the jackpot? Only one. You name one thing that you could do. What would that one thing be? I bet you we get like 12 different answers. Fire Panda, thank you. I appreciate the all the super chat love tonight. You know, BlizzFan, I know you're a big fan of The Fiend. I'm confused because I know you're obviously a big Alexa Bliss fan. Were you a huge fan of that Lady Fiend gimmick with Alexa? Because I would think that if there was any aspect of that you didn't like, that you wouldn't like The Fiend and you wouldn't want The Fiend back. So is that your favorite version of Alexa Bliss? I mean, is that why you want The Fiend back? Or are you just also a big Bray Wyatt fan, too? Necro Reefer says he would buy a piece of land and prepare for the end. Amiibo would retire and buy real estate in different countries. Brock would have a house built. Steven would start a foundation for orphan kids. That's very noble. That's a very noble thing of you. Beowulf would give most of it to St. Jude's. See? Yeah, we have quality people here in this chat. We have a lot of very good-hearted people here in this chat. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you people. Although I'm disappointed that nobody has yet to say they would give some of it to me. But that's okay. Fire Panda, thank you. Says one more. I appreciate that. The Coug would pay off his student loans. I know that pain. One of the best days of my life when I paid that debt off a few years ago. So I know that feeling all too well. Clapstick says, one last Vince in jail comment. Who's Linda hooking up with first, Hogan or Beefcake? Oh, man. Speaking of Hogan, and look at this. Look who pops up on my screen. There he is. The Mega Powers. Kevin Murillo with the $5 super chat. Buy a decommissioned lighthouse to live in. I don't know that a lighthouse would be big enough for you to live in. Rizzo with the 10 spot. If I won the lottery, I would buy the Tigers and fire Avila, our GM. Well, who would you hire, though? Who would you hire to replace him? Man, Fire Panda, he keeps firing off these super chats. He keeps saying, one more, here's another. He's on a roll, this guy. Demolition with the 199, strippers, Solomon Monster, and student loans. I like the way you think. You know, a lot of those strippers probably are stripping to pay off their student loans, so you would have something in common. So not only can you, have some fun between the sheets, but you might actually be able to have some conversation when you're done. So that's not a bad idea. Although I'm a little disappointed you only said strippers and student loans. You didn't say strippers and, cocaine or something. Then we can get Tony Khan in here. It could be one big party. Dr. Scorpio, I would sell a monster if the Mets won the World Series. You would what? What is it that you would do? Is Mike Piazza my favorite Mets player? No. I grew up, I was a big Gary Carter fan as a kid. I was a big Daryl Strawberry fan and Gary Carter. So it would probably, honestly, be one of them. Either Strawberry or Carter. Rizzo with the $10 super chat says, I would hire anyone in this chat to be the new GM. Plus you, because I'm sure you of all would do a better job than he has done. Yeah, but I'm a Mets fan. I don't have any interest in seeing the Tigers be successful, though. So I might sabotage your team. You ever think of that? Uffman says, is it time? Well, I think it is. John Moxley, what do you think? Do you think it's time?
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
Oh, it is. It's time to fuck Kevin Dunn. It is time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Our boy Magician Sapphire dropping in tonight. good to hear from you. Says, blow it all on video games and gaming PCs. Man, I would have the mother of all podcasting studio setups here. Just I have so many ideas in my head. I would be able to buy everything I need, all the furniture, all the equipment, the space for it, get it all set up. Ah, the things I would do if I hit the jackpot. So let's kick things off here in this Be the Booker segment. We do this every week. Take this thing for a spin. We will begin. Why don't we do the women first? I'm going to do the ladies first. I'm going to do the ladies, and then I'm going to do the men. Let's do the ladies first. Then we'll even do some tag team action. Here at Be the Booker, we begin with AJ Lee. AJ Lee, you know, Britt Baker has been angling for a match with AJ Lee, even though AJ is not coming back to the ring. I know she very much wants to have a match with her. So we've got AJ Lee, who's going to be stepping into the ring with the former Divas Champion. It'll be AJ Lee going one-on-one with Rowdy Ronda Rousey. That is a marquee match right there. Imagine the promos. Imagine AJ Lee absolutely destroying Ronda Rousey on the stick. If you thought that she destroyed the Bella Twins, imagine how she would destroy Ronda Rousey on the microphone. Oh, it would be a beautiful sight to see. I would love to see that. Now we switch on over to the men. And we have got ourselves the Stinger. Ah, the Stinger I grew up with. Surfer Sting. I miss Surfer Sting. I do. I miss Surfer Sting. Surfer Sting is still the favorite Sting. I think the best Sting. And we've got Surfer Sting going one-on-one. Ooh, look at that. Surfer Sting one-on-one with the original Kane. Now that's a fucking match right there. I love that. That's the Kane right there. The one that ripped the door off its hinges at the first Hell in a Cell. You put that Kane in the ring with the Sting of old. And that is a main event match on any pay-per-view. That's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to book marquee main event matches. And I just booked a marquee main event match. So we're two for two. Usually we screw up with the women's side here, but we're two for two so far. Now we go to the tag teams. I like where this is headed. We got the British Bulldogs. Davey Boy Smith, Dynamite Kid, former tag team champions. Can't go wrong with the Bulldogs. Right? Almost doesn't even matter now who we pick. Be the British Bulldogs. Step it into the ring with Private Party. You know what? I'm going to go with the bell on this one. We all know who's going to win. We know the Bulldogs are going to take the W there, but I think the British Bulldogs in their prime against the current day Private Party. Private Party, very good tag team. I don't know about a main event match. That wouldn't be a marquee main event, but I think that'd be a hell of a match. We did good.
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
That's right. That's right. No, we did good. We did good on Be the Booker this week. I love it. Oh, we've got spicy dried chicken dropping $2. If I won the lotto, I'm taking a trip to Amsterdam. Taking a trip to the red light district, I see. Lakers, Pats, Hook made us all hookers. No, wait, I said that wrong. Hook made all of us hookers. Proud tonight. I'm trying to think, is that the first time I've gone 3 for 3 and Be the Booker? I think it is. Since I added the tag teams to it, I think that might be the first time I went 3 for 3. Boy, I should be on the Mets. I went 3 for 3 tonight. So as I said earlier, we have a very busy weekend coming up. And I hope that you will join me for all of it. We'll have a quiet night tomorrow, but then Friday night, we're going to be doing SmackDown and SummerSlam predictions. We'll skip Rampage this week. We'll go live after 10 p.m. Saturday night is SummerSlam, one of the biggest shows all year, which means it'll be one of the biggest streams all year. So I expect you to be here for that as well. Sunday, of course, episode 767 of the podcast of the flagship, the mothership, dropping on all the usual audio platforms. And then Sunday night will be the Ric Flair final match pay-per-view. If you look at the card for this show, it is an impressive lineup that Conrad has put together here. But it all builds to the main event. Ric Flair teaming with Andrade El Idolo to take on Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. And for better or worse, I will be here when that show is over to give you my reaction. And we'll talk about it. We'll review the whole thing. So I hope you will come on back and join me for what should be a very busy, very fun weekend. Thank you to all of our channel members that I see in the chat with the badges. I see some of you have graduated to that next level. When you're a channel member for a certain amount of time without, you know, any breaks in between, you elevate your status. You get a new badge. So I see a lot of badges in the chat. I thank you. And I think we covered everything that we needed to cover. So be well. Stay safe. I'm going to get on out of here, and I'm going to have myself one of these. You think I was joking? I'm going to have one of these Monk Pack bars. Thank you to Monk Pack, because, again, they are now working with us. Monk Pack is our newest sponsor. I'm very proud of that. And in order for them to stay one of our sponsors, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to hit that link that is in the description box down below. And if you go to monkpack.com directly, if you use the code SOLOMONSTER, you will get 20% off. We do work with a lot of different sponsors, a lot of different companies. You know, usually 5% off, 10% off. You're going to get 20% off your first order with Monk Pack. And I'm telling you, these are keto granola bar. I don't have a keto diet, but it doesn't matter. The only thing I care about, there's no milk in this, so this is good for me. These bars are the shit. This stuff is good, okay? I'm not lying. I'm not bullshitting you. This stuff is good. So get the money off. Order a Monk Pack. Try it out yourself. Tell me if I'm wrong. Some of the flavor, they got all kinds of flavors there. They got a macadamia flavor. They got dark chocolate, sea salt, peanut butter, cocoa. Oh, it's all good. I've tried most of them by now. So support our sponsor and check out Monk Pack. Zombified guitarist, one of our channel members for 9 months. What's going on, Zombified guitarist? Good to hear from you, brother. Yeah, it's very bizarre that AJ, he's not hurt, but he has no match at SummerSlam. Unless he is the surprise opponent for Seth Rollins, which would be a hell of a match, right? Rollins and AJ. Even though we just saw that on TV, you know, a couple months ago. Maybe a little bit longer than that, but it was a few months ago we saw them on TV. There's no reason why AJ should not be in a match. No reason why AJ Styles should not be in a match on this pay-per-view. You know, look, now that Triple H is in power, like I said, all the balls are up in the air. Where they land, we don't know. This is the dawning of a new day. This is a new regime. Maybe now we start to see AJ Styles featured more, because he wasn't being featured as much before. With a new person in power, with a new person overseeing creative, anything can happen. Did I have a nightmare about Mrs. Balls? If I have to hear about Mrs. Balls one more time, I'm going to quit. I heard more about Mrs. Balls this week than I ever have to in my entire life. All right, I'm going to get out of here. Again, thank you all for the love tonight. And I'm going to be back with you on Friday night, as I always am. So until then, we'll give the last word to Mr. Moxley. Mr. Moxley, what is that again? What was that? You wanted to say something to the viewing audience here.
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
Indeed. See you guys on Friday.